Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an infinite line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Join us on a journey into the improbable.
Makeshift Stories presents episode 284, The Test Subject. Read by Steve Peterson. Opening and closing theme by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere and sometime, your mind might be unconsciously influenced by a bad actor.
Tarek finished the last exercise, hoping they'd come and remove the electrodes from his head. After 3 hours, the skin underneath the patches was starting to itch, especially the two on the back of his neck. If he hadn't been paid to sit there, he would have left as soon as they had informed him that he would need to be wired up. The online ad hadn't mentioned anything about being assessed by a machine. Tarek watched as a technician and a fit-looking man in his 40s, who had introduced himself as Dr. Glasgow, consulted, pointing in turns at different peaks and valleys in a series of incomprehensible graphs displayed on a large computer screen. Tarek assumed Glasgow was not a medical doctor, but someone with the letters PhD at the end of their name. After consulting for a minute, the two men nodded in agreement. Then Glasgow walked over and smiled. "As the lead researcher, I'd like to welcome you to the study, Mr. Edwin." Glasgow held out his hand, which Tarek shook. "Can I take this stuff off now? It's beginning to itch." "Oh, by all means, yes. Here, let me help," Glasgow said, reaching over to disconnect the electrodes on Tarek's forehead. "It's the ones on the back of my neck that are really stinging," Tarek complained. As soon as the doctor removed the wires, Tarek peeled the irritating sticky pads off, rubbing the places where they had been. The skin underneath was rough, and there were two raised spots, almost like pimples, but oddly flat. Glasgow watched Tarek massage his neck. "It's just a reaction to the gel we use to increase skin conductivity. It will go away in a day or so. The good news is your potential receptivity makes you an ideal candidate to participate in our telepathy study. You can put your mind at ease. It won't involve another test like this, so you don't have to feel like a lab rat again," he joked uneasily. "You'll be acting as a receiver, and all you need to do is practice a form of meditation, which we'll show you how to do." "Meditation?" Tarek didn't like the sound of that. "It's only 10 minutes twice a day," Glasgow assured. "Once in the morning and once in the afternoon. We'll give you a schedule before you leave. All we ask is that you record any visions you have during those short sessions. People in the study whom we've identified as broadcasters will try to send you images while you meditate. That's all we need from you. Easy enough, right?" Tarek hesitated, then smiled. "If that's all that's involved, where do I sign?" For what they had offered to pay him, he would play along. Tarek hadn't told them he thought ESP was bogus and wasn't going to. The daily honorarium was more than his cousin earned in 2 entire shifts at the fulfillment center, so he could afford to put his skepticism on the shelf for the duration of the study. Tarek found it odd they hadn't asked him about his views on ESP. However, the study was the first good thing to happen to him since he immigrated almost a year ago. Until now, he had been waiting in limbo while some nameless official in a professional licensing organization decided what it would take for them to recertify his software engineering credentials. In the meantime, he had been living on his cousin's couch. At least now he would have the money to contribute to the expenses. His cousin hadn't complained, but he could tell she was getting tired of the situation. "There are a few consent forms you'll need to sign on the way out," Glasgow informed him. "And a brief orientation session tomorrow will explain the meditation technique and recording process. Your first payment will be in your account when you get home. Again, welcome to the program." "Nisha, meet me at the Spark Cafe. I've got good news." Tarek texted his cousin as soon as he was outside. "It's my treat," Tarek smiled, encouraging Nisha to sit. She hesitated before taking the bar stool beside him. "Where is the money coming from?" she asked suspiciously. "I got a gig." "Doing what?" "It sounds crazy, but they are paying me to be in an extrasensory perception trial. It's something to do with telepathy. They didn't explain everything and said the less I know, the more unbiased the results will be. All I have to do is clear my mind twice a day and write down what images come to mind. Nisha looked at her cousin skeptically. Really, and they're going to pay you to do this? It sounds like some kind of scam, Tarek. You're new to this country, and some people will try to take advantage of you. Watch. They'll want to sell you something. Be careful, and don't sign any agreements or contracts. You might end up in debt or worse, she warned. No, it's not like that, Tarek dismissed. They're paying me up front each day. That's how I can afford to take you to lunch. It's just a study. Look, this is their web page. Tarek handed Nisha his phone. She grabbed it and flicked through a few screens before giving it back. I'd still be careful. That doesn't say who's behind the Center for Extrasensory Research. Just because it has a web page and an office doesn't mean it isn't some kind of scam. If it's a scam, why would they pay me up front? Tarek argued. Despite his cousin's objections, he was determined to go through with it. I can drop out when I want. I'll quit if I get my credentials recertified before the study ends. In the meantime, it's some money, and I can start to help with expenses. Plus, I got a signing bonus.
The money would help, Nisha admitted reluctantly.
It must have been a big bonus, she remarked, pointing to her cousin's feet. When did you get the fancy footwear? You don't even like trainers, Tarek. Tarek looked at his feet. I must have put on someone else's shoes when I left the center's office. You have to take them off before your evaluation.
They look new, Nisha noted. There's even a price tag on one.
Tarek stared at his feet, then reached down, pulled off the offending tag, and examined it. I'll text the center and ask if someone's looking for them. One of the other participants must be walking around in my old shoes. Tarek picked up his phone, tapped in a message, and waited. He read the response, confused. No one reported missing a pair of trainers, he told his cousin.
You don't remember putting them on, do you? Nisha accused. During your interview, what type of testing did they do?
They just asked me questions about what came to mind when I stared at a blank wall. Tarek massaged his temples.
Wait, no, there was more. Maybe I fell asleep for a bit, he admitted. I was tired and it was relaxing. They also measured my brain waves, using electrodes on my forehead.
You don't seem sure, Nisha squinted at her cousin. Turn your head for a second. There are two marks on the back of your neck like something pricked you there. She reached out to touch them. Tarek brushed her hand away. I'm fine, he dismissed. The researcher at the center told me it's just a reaction to the gel they use and will go away in a few days.
I'd keep an eye on that, Nisha advised, typing something into her phone. There are no complaints about the Center for Extrasensory Research, but not much info either.
I'll be okay, Tarek insisted. The shoes had thrown him, but he wasn't about to admit that to his cousin. He wanted everything to go right for once. I'm hungry. Let's order, he encouraged. A field with dead flowers, a bicycle, and bread, slices of it falling from the sky. Tarek finished typing, wondering if he had said enough and if they even believed what he told them. Sometimes, like today, he didn't see anything in his mind and made stuff up. Would they know? He hesitated as a pang of guilt raced through him, then hit submit. Despite Nisha's concerns that he would somehow be taken advantage of, nothing terrible had happened, and the money had eased the underlying tension between himself and his cousin. All Tarek needed to do was follow the schedule the center sent, which changed from day to day. Sure, he still had the lumps on the back of his neck where the electrodes had been, but they weren't sore anymore, and he had the occasional headache after a session, which he wrote off as stress from concentration. You can't afford to have anything on your record before you get your permanent status, Nisha had pointed out, and he knew she was right. So at his cousin's insistence, he asked several times about the new trainers. No one came forward to claim them, and because they were more comfortable than his shoes, he began to wear them when he went out on his daily walks. The walks were something the center had encouraged to relax his mind. One day, while doing his laundry, he found a crumpled receipt for the shoes in his pants pocket. He had no clue how it had gotten there and no memory of buying them. Mr. Edwin, thanks for coming in on such short notice, Dr. Glasgow greeted Tarek as he entered the antiseptic room where they first met. I know I said we wouldn't have to wire you up again, but we need to redo your test, he apologized. Is there something wrong? Tarek asked, fearful they had somehow figured out he had been making stuff up. No, no, everything is fine. We're making great progress. We just need to recapture your brain's electroencephalogram. The first one had some interference from the equipment. We want to get a clean one for our baseline. It's nothing to be concerned about. Tarek instinctively felt the back of his neck. The spots where you put the electrodes are still there, he complained. Glasgow examined the skin where Tarek's fingers had been. I can't see anything, he declared after a moment, but I'll give you some cream. Rub it on the spots that are bothering you twice a day. Glasgow had Tarek lie back and then tape the electrodes to his skin. We don't need ones on your neck this time. Just concentrate on a blank spot on the ceiling, he directed. Tarek thought he felt a slight tingle in his head as Glasgow and a technician initiated the recording. We're done, the doctor suddenly announced, leaning over Tarek to disconnect the electrodes. That's it? Didn't you just start? Tarek asked. We've been at it for almost 30 minutes. The recording looks good this time, Glasgow assured, removing the last sticky patch on Tarek's forehead. Then Glasgow offered him a towel to clean off the syrupy gel. We've got everything we need for now. Tarek swung himself off the examination couch, his head spinning. He sat on the edge until the world settled down. Everything was new, and he could smell off gassing plastic. He almost expected to see recently discarded boxes and packing material in the corner of the room. Aside from the gear and ultra-modern furnishings, the place was so clean that it made him feel grubby. Tarek imagined a cleaning bot vacuuming up his skin flakes after he left so the next person would feel like they had been the first subject to use the room. Outside in the hall, he walked toward the elevators. All the office doors were identical, distinguished only by numbers and unobtrusive plexiglass signs. If he hadn't known the Center for Extrasensory Research was in Office 702, he doubted he could have found it again. While waiting for a train, an ad for sunscreen on the opposite wall of the subway station caught his eye. It showed a person's tanned back and behind them, the deep blue of an ocean. Tarek instantly felt the sun's warmth and the sand sliding between his toes. Sun, waves, feet in sand, sailboat, Tarek read back his afternoon report. The meditation session had been a complete wash. He had got nothing other than the images from the subway ad. Had there been a sailboat in it? There must have been, he concluded. He was thinking about the image of feet in the sand when the apartment door opened and closed. His cousin had come home from work, dropping her bags in the front hall. Hey, Tarek, you need to clean this up, she yelled in an irritated tone. He quickly submitted his report, then raced to see what Nisha wanted. He found her tiptoeing around a spot near the front door.
Sand! She glared at him. There's sand in your trainers and all over the hall.
I didn't go anywhere today other than the research center, Tarek gaped at the floor. It looks like you spent the afternoon at the beach, Nisha complained. Reaching into the front closet, she handed him a broom. Tarek felt a headache come on as he began to sweep up the mess. Honestly, I'm not lying. I didn't go anywhere there was sand. The words were no sooner out of Tarek's mouth when he realized he didn't remember anything after seeing the subway ad to the moment he had filled in his afternoon report. If he told Nisha, she'd pressure him to quit the study and see a doctor. So he said nothing. It had been 2 weeks since the sand incident, and everything had been fine. Tarek followed the meditation schedule and submitted his daily reports. The headaches had disappeared and payments kept coming. One day after his afternoon meditation session, he noticed a spot of mustard on his t-shirt and food wrappers in the garbage from a nearby fast food chain. He hated fast food. Hey, Nisha, did you buy takeout this morning? His cousin asked when she went to toss some old papers into the bin. No. Well, there's a bunch of food wrappers in the garbage and I can smell the grease. I thought you didn't like that stuff, Nisha pointed out, carefully watching Tarek's reaction. He stared at the crumpled wrappers. He didn't want to admit that he couldn't remember buying the burger, but the pain of another headache suddenly took over. I'm experiencing gaps in my memory, Tarek complained. He lay on his back, electrodes on his forehead and neck, After the most recent incident, he called Dr. Glasgow and requested a meeting. Yesterday I found fast food wrappers in the garbage, but I don't remember buying takeout. And the headaches, they seem to accompany the memory gaps.
Dr. Glasgow listened distractedly, watching the dancing patterns of Tarek's electroencephalograph on a monitor with his assistant. The two men seemed to agree, and Glasgow adjusted a control on the machine connected to the electrodes on Tarek's head.
"Hey," he flinched. "What did you do?"
"It felt like an electric current just went through my head." Glasgow turned to Tarek, incredulity written across his face.
"That's impossible. We're just monitoring your brain waves, and they're normal. As for the memory loss and pain, there have never been any reports of those effects, even in the most sensitive telepaths. Have you recently hit your head or changed your diet?"
Tarek shook his head.
"Then I wouldn't worry about them. It's not from the meditation. We're almost finished with the study, so I don't want you taking drugs for the headaches or getting an MRI or something. Any intervention would throw off our results."
"We're so close, Mr. Edwin. I'll tell you what. If you can hold on for another week, we'll triple what we're paying you. After that, if you still have problems, I can get a neurologist friend to look at you for free."
Tarek's first instinct was to rip the electrodes off and walk out, but strangely instead, he agreed to keep going at triple the rate. When he left the office, he didn't have a care in the world, and the following week went without incident. Overnight, a perplexing breach occurred at a nearby data center, baffling authorities. A local news reporter announced while a video of police cars outside the entrance of an office played in the background. A lone perpetrator evaded security measures and infiltrated the central server room, gaining unfettered access to the entire Stratus Cloud network. While company representatives remained tight-lipped regarding potential data loss, an inside expert, speaking unofficially, suggests that sensitive information might have been compromised. Stratus, renowned for providing vital cloud services to the financial industry, faces scrutiny in the wake of this breach. In an effort to identify the culprit, officials released a security camera image of the suspect. A grainy image replaced the announcer.
"You gotta see this," Nisha gasped, pushing her laptop across the table to Tarek.
"You can't see much, but look at those trainers. They're just like yours."
Tarek twisted the laptop to see, then leaned in to look closer. The image was dark and distorted, but what leapt out of the gloom was a pair of brightly colored trainers caught in mid-stride, crossing a muddy boulevard beside an industrial building. Tarek looked from the small screen to his feet and back, his stomach churning.
"There's got to be more than one pair out there, so that proves nothing," he almost pleaded, grabbing his forehead as it began to throb so hard it felt like his brain was about to explode.
"You've got a headache again, don't you?" Nisha accused, watching him grimace. Tarek nodded, pushed the laptop away, leaned back in his chair, and exhaled.
"It'll pass in a minute. That's not me."
"You believe me, right?"
"It couldn't be. I don't even know where the data center is, and I was here last night."
His cousin watched him, doubt growing in her eyes.
"I fell asleep early," she admitted, "and when I got up this morning, there were muddy footprints in the front hall that someone had tried to clean up. Tarek, you've been acting strange since starting that ESP thing. And the headaches. You never had headaches before. You don't remember anything about last night, do you?"
Tarek hesitated before shaking his head.
"No, I don't," he reluctantly admitted. The color drained from his face. "I just wanted everything to be okay. I wanted to feel that I was contributing, so I ignored the signs. It's not the first time I've been unable to recall what I did for several hours. You were right, Nisha. I needed to be more careful."
The doctor enlarged the x-rays until they clearly showed two grain-sized objects at the center of a web of hair-thin wires that radiated away to various points on Tarek's skull.
"You said they only attached electrodes to the back of your neck where those small lumps are. No needles or surgical equipment was involved, correct?"
"Yes, as far as I can recall," Tarek confirmed. He had gone to a walk-in clinic.
"I don't know what they are," the doctor conceded. "They're not natural. If anything, they look like some type of microchip. They had to be implanted, and I believe they are the source of your headaches. As for your memory loss, there is no way to tell if they are the cause.
but we can't remove them without knowing what their purpose is. I hate telling you to return to that center, but I need more information." As Tarek approached the anonymous-looking office building, he admitted to himself that he was surprised it was still there. Somehow he had been expecting to return to find a different building or a vacant lot. However, his optimism was short-lived when he got off the 7th-floor elevator. They all looked alike, so he had to check and ensure he was on the right floor before making his way down the hall to number 702. The first sign that something was wrong was the blank nameplate beside the door, which was partly ajar. "Hello," his voice echoed through the suite beyond. When no one answered, Tarek entered, poking his head inside tentatively. The office was empty. Not even a scrap of paper remained. It smelled of fresh paint and new carpet. There was nothing there, and Tarek knew he wouldn't find anything. When he instinctively touched the back of his neck, heat came off it in two spots as if something was burning under the skin. His head exploded in pain, and all he could do was collapse onto the new carpet and wait for the sensation to pass. When he got back to his cousin's apartment, it was dark. Uniformed police guarded the door, and thinking the worst, Tarek rushed inside. "Ah, Mr. Edwin, finally, you're back," a plainclothes detective greeted. She was sitting at their kitchen table with Nisha, who looked terrified. "We're here to ask you some questions about the data center break-in the other night. We understand you're a software engineer." Tarek touched the back of his neck. The two small lumps were gone.
This is where we like to recommend a podcast, and this time, we want to share another great Lighthouse Studio production with you, The Lucky Die. The Lucky Die is a 5e D&D actual play podcast that utilizes the drama inherent in a role-playing game's rule set to tell a dark and dramatic, improvised tale. Edited for audio quality and beautifully scored, TLD focuses on four heavily flawed characters as they try to stop the apocalypse and right the wrongs in their own lives. The Lucky Die is available wherever you listen to your audio. You can find out more about TLD at theluckydie.com and discover other Blighthouse Studio productions at blighthouse.studio. You can help us create original content twice a month by heading over to ko-fi.com/makeshiftstories and making a one-time donation or becoming an ongoing supporter at patreon.com/makeshiftstories. And if you can, please leave us a review or rating wherever you're listening to the podcast. It helps new listeners discover us. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. Makeshift Stories is released around the beginning and middle of the month. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Steve Peterson. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by Matthew Erdman. Audio production and editing by Makeshift Studios. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial, attribution, no derivative license.